So welcome to the first episode, return episode of the Truth to Power Show. We were recording between 2017 and 2022, and we took a little break, but we're returning to air and to the archives now with Douglas Calla as our co-host. Welcome, Douglas.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Thank you.
Excited to be here.
Great
Yeah.
to have you. Great to have your fellow poet, I'm a former Staten Islander, but Douglas currently lives in Staten Island and a slam poet, I believe, like kind of a performance-based poet, right?
For the most part, theatricality, slam poetry. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, great, great. So today we're welcoming my colleague and friend, Braden Buchanan, who's a backwaters animist, spiritual health coach, nature-based energy worker, meditation teacher, and lover of trees and woods. An all-around swell guy. I can definitely attest to that. I pulled that from your website, Wild Orchard Meditation. And then your bio, we're going to go into a lot about your bio, a lot about your life story, a lot about your beliefs and experiences with animism and cowboy culture. Let's start there. So you began your bio by saying, Braden, you began your bio by saying you were raised in the cowboy culture of rural North Texas on a large wooden farm. So why don't we start a little bit about the origin stories, if you will, of yourself, your current incarnation, if you will.
My earliest memories. I was a creek kid. That's what I like to call it. I mean, I grew up running through the farm, through the woods, and through the creeks, watching the deer and the animals and all of that. And that was the bulk of my childhood, was being outdoors by myself with my dogs, just running wild. And that really concreted in a lot of my persona, my personality, a lot of like my interests and my spirituality these days has come from that. My love of nature started very young. And from very small town, rural farmland, Texas, and the culture there. And if you know me for 5 minutes, you know I don't fit in very well in that culture. I mean, it's fine for those people. That's how they want to live. That's the person they are. If that's who they want to be, if they want to be there. But it's never been me. But yeah, I've always felt most at home in the woods with my dogs, just in the nice, quiet places of the world, with the animals and trees and
Yeah, I guess like you began to discover, would you say it was in college? You mentioned about college, taking psychology 101 and discovering meditation. Was that your first encounter with formal meditation?
It was, yeah. My first semester of college, I took Psychology 101, and my professor was really big on mindfulness, which I didn't know what it was back then. That was 20 years ago, and she taught us one little meditation, and I took to it like a fish to water. Like it was amazing to me, and I really loved it. And I decided I'm gonna dig more into it, and I found some websites for, just learningmeditation.com, I think it was. And that's where I learned about my first journey work, I guess it was. I didn't know what it was at the time, but there was a video for Find Your Power Animal. And that's a term I don't really use much anymore because that is not something I do. But I had an amazing experience. And I met, my first, what we will call a spirit. There's many words for it. And I'd spent the last 20 years, every time I'd meditate, I would contact that individual. And I built a relationship over 20 years with Mother Doe. And, oh, it's beautiful.
Know, it's interesting. I've been going through a retrospective on the films of what is it, Miyazaki.
Miyazaki, yeah, of course,
Hayao
sure,
Miyazaki.
yeah,
And
totally,
a lot of
yeah.
times they talk about, a lot of times in his films, he focuses on like children and how they have
Yeah.
a connection with nature and how their connection, a special communication with these spirit animals. And you were mentioning how in your early memories, watching the spectral deer and rabbits play and
Right.
all this kind of thing. And do you feel like, you kind of were able to conjure up that younger self when you encountered it formal practice, you're able to embody that younger self. So I think that's a really great ray of hope for like older adults who are like adults who are coming into this practice to contact that younger side of themselves, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would say the most beautiful, empowering, and spiritual thing I've ever done is just return to my childhood self, to what made me happy as a kid, what I've always been connected to in some form or fashion. Like, I didn't always have this practice I do as formally, but like you said, but as a kid, like, I really, my earliest memories, aside from being in the creek, we're sitting in my living room and watching deer and rabbit play in the living room. And that was, of course, these were apparitions. These weren't real rabbits and deer. Well, they real is a subjective term, but they were real to me. And I mean, I couldn't have been 4 or 5 years old. And then when I decided to commit myself to this and make this a true formal practice was when my son was about that same age, and I was sitting on the couch with him watching Yogi Bear or some cartoon, and he points to the shadow on the wall and says, "Owl, owl, owl." And I said, okay, because I'd been noticing owls a lot lately too, owl spirits coming in and into my practice, and I hadn't mentioned it to him. He was barely verbal at the time. He may have been a little over 2 years old, maybe a little younger. And so I pick him up and take him over to the shadow on the wall, and he touches it, goes, "Owl, owl, owl," and starts to pet it. I said, okay, you see what's there. I saw this as a kid. I want to let you have a better experience of this sort of thing than I did as a child, because I had to keep it hush hush. I mean, nobody would believe me what I was seeing. So that's when I decided I was going to find a teacher. And at this time, I still didn't know shamanism. It was just another word for me. I thought the same pop culture references about it too. But I'm like, okay, let's find a teacher. And we live in rural Texas, which very small community. And so I just found the only person I could find in Texas. And I'm really glad I found my teacher. I found who she was when I found her. Just the most loving individual, Aunt Adam. And she's been my guide ever since and taught me a lot of beautiful things. And I've helped my kids. Both of them are very sensitive to all sorts of, well, HSPs, you know, the highly sensitive person and very energetically sensitive, very spiritually sensitive.
Yeah, it's really great. I think like the energies sometimes like they break through to other people. You know, it's all it makes people be like, oh, am I sensitive? Am I not sensitive? But like when it's the right time, you know, it seems to break through. The timing seems to be everything. Divine timing or some kind of timing
Absolutely.
that, you know, it's just a question of flipping the lens of I think it was that somebody, I think it might have been Carl Jung who said that the unconscious presents itself in so many different ways, you know, the unconscious forces. So sometimes we think about circumstances and think about it as just being circumstances, but actually, you know, it's the unconscious presenting itself to you in some way or fashion or form. And if we just flip the lens and looking at it in a different way, yeah, and we could get a little deeper into like this highly sensitive person and how you work with people who are perhaps not as highly sensitive or kind of, you know, dull to their senses. How do you bring them back to the, you know, I think it was it Fritz Perls said, lose your mind, return to your senses? Yeah, I think it was the phrase
Yeah.
Fritz Perls says. So
Yeah.
how do we get people to return to their senses? Yeah.
Oh, that's a great question. And it takes time and work, and effort, and there's not a fast way to do it. It takes training. There are some, obviously some people are more gifted at it than others and they could just jump into it. But I would say 99% of people can't do that. And that's okay. That's totally fine. We'll work. We'll do the method. I do believe that everybody can connect to this, but it takes a lot more work for some people than others. But it's totally possible. I am myself very visual, so when I go on journeys, I see very vivid, like I'm watching a movie, like I'm really living the situation out. When I was in my apprenticeship, there were several other people with me at the kind of the same level I was at, and most of them wouldn't see what I saw, but they would feel things. They would hear things. They would smell things. So everybody is tuned into a different sense that is kind of their base function when they're journeying. So a lot of people will just be totally auditory. They'll hear the voices, they'll get downloads of information, they'll get all this. And some people like me are very visual. We're reliving through the scenario, through the scene. And I've known people that will smell, like doing journeys on journey work with several other people, that there's I smell leather, I smell wet animal fur, I smell earth. And like, okay, you're connecting. That's how you connect. And then eventually, as you progress, you'll move into another sense. Like, I didn't start feeling things energetically until the very end of my apprenticeship. But I would see the whole scene play out.
Yeah, and also you talked about in your bio being an animistic counselor, recognizing that God is in every living thing. So recognizing that, I think of it in terms of Buddha nature, kind of recognizing that every person has that Buddha nature, inherent goodness, that inherent, and I'm sure you agree with that. But
Oh, yeah.
also about every tree, a possum, baby, rock, blade of grass, and every drop of water is an aspect of God. I want to go into where God fits into this. What's God got to do with this kind of a question, and how God fits into the Buddha nature and this what you're talking about tapping into that potentiality is within that client.
Oh, yes. So I use the word God because that's, from cowboy culture, small town Texas, Christian background. But replace that with source, universe. Use whatever word for God you want. But there is the divine in everything. And I also really like the concept of panpsychism with the consciousness, everything, every atom has a little tiny bit of consciousness. And to me, that consciousness is God, is source, is universe. And when a being, an object, or anything becomes more complex, that consciousness melds and becomes greater than it would have been as that single atom. So that's not in every situation. I'm still figuring this out, but I really like the idea of it that every little thing has that bit of divine consciousness in it. And everything has the potential for awesomeness. I mean, really. I mean, it's hard to describe in words the things I've seen in journeying, the things I've seen. I've spoken with trees, I've spoken with stones, just connecting my consciousness to their consciousness. And it's not always a living, what we would consider a living being. But the consciousness is there. And that's, to me, is divinity within everything.
Yeah, I think like that encoding as well. We think about the matrix kind of filling the code, spiraling down. And I think like that knowing seems to be there, that once you tap past, when it comes to this shamanic practices, a lot of times they'll say, the journeying, we're talking about journeying to other worlds, other realms. Of the listeners, like you're kind of traveling psychically to these other realms. And they always say, like, to trust the benevolence of the spirits you're encountering, which is something that's important to go into these realms without fear or without apprehension because they're of the imagination. And we want to kind of go in with the idea that there's a benevolence there. And yet at the same time, we're trying to navigate our own obstructions in our own mind. So if you can talk a little bit about the benevolence versus, obstructions and like whether or not you would term that evil or whether you term that in some other word you would use. Do you have any knowledge about that, or do you kind of have an experience with that?
Yeah. So I don't think everything out there is benevolent. I think there are forces out there that I don't know if I'd use the word evil. I'd use the more word selfish, more into their own desires than helping. But there is a beautiful, universal, all-encompassing, omnipresent love. And that's what I intend to tap into. When I go into a journey, when I go into practice, when I know I'm going to another world, I go with the intention of seeking out that love. And in love, there is protection. But there are things, and they will come up out of nowhere that just, hey, if any, my rule of thumb when I'm dealing with what we would not consider benevolent spirits is that if they want something from you, I don't necessarily deal with them. If they show you anything but love, or if they show me anything but love, I kind of pass on. It's kind of like talking to a salesman, like they're trying to get something out of you.
Right.
And they can be extremely charismatic and coercive. So if I ever get the hint that they are wanting something more than just to share love and wisdom and joy with me, I'm like, I don't think this is the right path for me to be on.
Yeah, at the same time, some Buddhist practitioners will say, having cake and tea and cake with demons is like a
Right.
practice where they make an offering of some kind to the demon in order to congress with them. But that's a different, maybe a different practitioner would do that. Some practitioners will make an offering of some kind. But you have to be careful with that, obviously. You don't want to be like giving them too much, but you want to make some kind of appeasement if needed, if needed. It depends on the circumstances, but sometimes some kind of appeasement might be needed for certain practitioners in order to congress with or pass that gatekeeper test, but it depends on the situation, obviously. But
So,
logic
in that
around,
situation,
yeah, go
what I
ahead.
like to do is like with nature spirits,
Yeah.
like of the land, of the environment, I will go to the woods with a bag of apples and with the intent of like, here is a thank you to the environment, to the animals that live here, to the elemental spirits. And I give apples, I'll give organic fruits, a sweet treat, giving like taking a casserole to the neighbors. That's how I like to refer it to. Like, here's a thank you. Here's a get to know you. And that's what I do as not really an appeasement, but as a gratitude offering.
That's really great. That's really great practice. And how does that deal with folk medicine or folk? You mentioned that as well. It reminds me a little bit of like kind of like I make a connection in my mind, but maybe
Yeah.
it's separate. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. There's been practices like that for centuries. I'm not as versed in it as I would like to be, and I'm still learning this, but a lot of Appalachian folk traditions, very similar to my practice.
Yeah.
I've had to come about mine very organically, just because while I was from that culture, my grandparents died very young, and a lot of this we didn't talk about. This is very hush hush, and you do what you do, and you don't talk about it. But Appalachian folk magic, Appalachian folk healing medicines, they don't use the drum, which is more shamanic, but it's a very animistic culture. A lot of it is getting talked about now. And there's a lot of great, I follow a lot of them on Instagram, some people that are bringing back those old traditions of the folk healing and the folk magic. And I think it's fascinating. But yeah, like giving apples, giving just a little treat to the deer. With the intention of thank you from me to you, setting that intention in your head, not just throwing a bag of apples out in the woods, but here you go,
Yeah.
but like
Yeah.
really making a ceremony out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Ritual is so important in that
Yeah.
context, you talked about when you met Mother Doe, Doe Mother, you talked about asking her a question. And a
Yeah.
lot of times, like asking a question, making a request with your intention seems to be part of the practice. So, and you asked about the future in your bio. You asked about the future and we talk a little bit about the questioning and the answer you received. Yeah.
So that was the first meditation I did from that website. The guided meditation said, now that you've met your power animal, ask it a question that requires deep wisdom. And I asked, well, what does my future hold? And no answer came at first. So I'm like, okay, well, this was fun. This was great. I enjoyed it. Let it go. 2 days later, 2 or 3 days later, I was laying on the couch and I just kind of drifted off, not to sleep, but just out of my body, out of my mind, to this whole other realm. And I went back to the forest where I met the doe, and she was waiting for me. And she wasn't speaking to me at the time, like no verbal back and forth, but she kind of nodded and gestured, like, follow me. So we ran through the woods, and we came to a spot in the woods, and it's like, and the only way to describe it is like a Costco bathroom that has that zigzag entrance with no door, just those
Yeah.
two walls.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, this is where I need to go to find my answer. She's yes. And so I take 2 steps towards it, and she jumps in front of me and turns into this giant fanged monster. And like, no, you are not to go in here. And I was terrified. And I woke up, like physically woke up back to my body with a like I hadn't been breathing for 5 minutes. Like just and I was just awestruck by it. That I went from the physical realm to the spiritual realm, back to the physical realm with just this huge jump. I don't know how long it took. And it was terrifying at first. But then after I sat there and thought about it, like, you know, she wasn't trying to hurt me. She was protecting me. This is not knowledge for me yet. And 3 nights ago, I actually went back and asked the question again. And I got an answer. I finally, she said, okay, it's time. You've done enough work. And I don't, let this is a long story. We won't go into like the full details of the answer, but I got my answer.
Yeah, it seems like that story also illustrates part of the answer to the question we were asking before. It's just a question of perspective, whether or not the demon is like really a demon or really just a benevolence in disguise, you
Right.
know? So maybe it's just appearance to mind that comes to you, and you know, to what extent the spirit is revealing itself to you in its true form is a question, you know, because it appears
Right.
scary, and then yeah.
That's a great thought, because from my understanding and what I've witnessed, what I've experienced, animal spirits are not necessarily animal spirits. They come to you in the form of an animal that you have a connection with. They are higher spirits that know your brain can't process all of this at
Right.
now. So if they come to you in what I would assume would be their true form, your brain's just going to melt. And no other way to say it, but they come to you in a form you recognize, you're comfortable with, that you're easy with, you can digest. So they come as animals usually, or plants. I've seen many come as trees, flowers, but usually every time I've done it, it's been a naturally occurring organism, like a tree or a deer or an owl or something. But yeah, the more you get to know them, the longer you build a relationship, the higher. We will say high vibration. The higher you bring your vibration, the higher you bring your consciousness, the more their appearance will change. So now Doe Mother no longer appears to me as just a doe, but as a beautiful woman with some sort of deer aspect, or maybe antlers, maybe a tail, maybe ears, but something that denotes the deer nature of her. But she appears now almost always in humanoid form.
Yeah. So those are my listeners. This is the Truth to Power Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. We're here with myself, VGR Nathan, as the host, Douglas Kella, and Braden Buchanan, talking a little bit about shamanic practices and or indigenous and influenced energy work, and your experience with it. You know, animism,
Well,
spiritual health, nature-based energy work. So now you went to Naropa. We met through going to Naropa University to learn the mindfulness-based transpersonal counseling. And you're finishing up your master's now. If you tell a bit about how that influenced or impacted your prior practices, and how that kind of changed your path or maybe continued to augment your
yeah.
path, yeah.
I really went to Naropa because for the mindfulness. I didn't really know what the word transpersonal meant when I went there originally, because through my own healing journey, I had a lot of meditation, lot heavy, heavy meditation work. And that's what I feel healed me more than anything else. And when I really started learning what transpersonal was, kind of the woo-woo side that I love so much, I'm like, I really dug into that and found Naropa a little lacking on that. Which, I mean, we've got to be KCREP accredited, that we can only get so woo-woo at being an official school, and that's fine. I just wish there was a little bit more, you know.
Yeah, I know
But
a lot of universities are going into that now, like are going into deeper and deeper into more esoteric studies. But
yeah. I would say my biggest takeaway for my practice from Naropa was social justice and decolonizing. And being a white man from a cowboy culture doing shamanism. And because of that, I have taken a lot of what would be called considered cultural practices out of my practice. I no longer sage, because from what I understand, sage is a closed Native American religious practice. I no longer refer to them as power animals because it's a totemic thing that is not really what I do, but there is a lot of cultural practices that do that. I do not, in any form or fashion, wish to hurt people with what I do. I really don't. And I'm still learning and I'm still evolving. But like I've said, animism has been a part of my life, my entire life, since I was a little kid. And the shamanic side of it, to if anyone who Googles shamanism, it's going to immediately come up with indigenous cultural spiritual practices. White guy from Texas. And I understand that I can very easily offend and hurt people doing that. I don't want to do that, but I also want to do what is true to me and how I know how to help people. So I serve my community in the best way I know how, which has always been come natural to me. But at the same time, yeah, I don't want to hurt people. I don't want to take another cultural's appropriation, you know?
Yeah, it's such a discussion
Over that.
now. At the same time, I feel like we're there's so few and far between of these practitioners who are kind of like able to connect with communities, and the culture is important to propagate at some level. The knowledge and the importance of the culture in this zeitgeist, in this time and age, the knowledge and the wisdom important to continue to propagate. The ideas, the concepts are open to all consciousness. Really, the consciousness studies is really what it
Right.
is. Really studying consciousness, a student of consciousness, a student of kind of what is consciousness, what is the nature, healing nature of consciousness is really so
Right.
important to tap into our own inherent our own hearts, our own deep energies, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, consciousness is something we've all got to learn more about, tap more into. And my teacher Anne is Native American, and she taught us a lot of Native American practices. And I was invited in by an individual from that culture to do some of those cultural practices. I think if you're going to do shamanism and stuff, you have to learn through that way and then
Sure. Yeah.
do it in a way that honors both how you were raised, how you honor yourself, honor the culture you're representing. And be respectful in all accounts. When I am going to do a day of ceremonies, even though I've taken most of the Native American cultural practices out of my practice, I will always do an honoring, respectful ceremony, honoring ceremony, where I thank the people that came on the land before me, the land that I occupy. And I'll say a prayer and I'll drum for them, the people that came there before me, that were animists and did the practices that I do now. I know it is in no way makes up for anything, but I personally feel it's very important to be respectful.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that a lot of times that has to do with the history of colonialism, and you were talking about decolonizing practices and practicing and oneself and one's own mind is the main thing to decolonize. The colonial mindset is the main thing to
Right.
decolonize. Rather than because it's so much just in this conversation, it feels like we can't go back in time, we can't change history, but we can work to we talked about oppression and internalized depression, and the main thing is to overcome or to address internalized depression, I think, is the main thing, that internalized colonization.
Right.
That seems to be the front and foremost of the conversation, that at the very least we freed our minds. And what is it? And the rest will follow, kind of a thing. I think
Right.
that's how the song goes, you know?
What are your goals after you complete your master's? Like, what do you want to do with that, with that course of study after you've done? Like, do you want to go into teaching this or passing it down, or what do you want to do? What do you
Right
want to do?
now, I will always be a student. Whether I'm the teacher role or the student role, I'm always going to be learning. I have kind of set at a point right now where I want to be more of a coach right now. I don't know where the next years are going to take me, but right now I'm settling on I love doing this. It's so integral to who I am. And like I've got my master, almost got my master's in mindfulness-based transpersonal counseling, but I don't know if I'm going to go the route of traditional counseling. I'm much more, even though I spent 3 years at Naropa versus the time I spent apprenticeship, my apprenticeship is much more important to me than my master's degree. And I feel like this is the path I need to be on, definitely. And this is my focus, helping people in the way that I'm good at. And I do feel that I am good at what I do, and what I do is not traditional counseling, energy work, spirit work, ceremony, meditation, teaching people what healed me. And I'm not going to be some. I've always like detested the idea of me being some highfalutin spiritual guru. I want to teach people to do what I do. I want everybody to do better than I do, to just learn the path and then take it their own way and not pass down my wisdom from a high pulpit or something like that. You know, I want people to be able to do what I do.
Yeah, I think it's sharing that shared intelligence that we all have, as you were mentioning before, about the consciousness being the intelligence, your own consciousness, and the ultimate consciousness being the intelligence that we're drawing from. I
I
guess.
have an interesting question, actually. Have you ever taken any like aids when you've done stuff like this, like any type of psychoactives or anything like that?
I never have. I've never in my life taken a psychedelic of any sort of mind, like, so marijuana when I was in my 20s. That's the extent of my aid use. And I've never needed it. I'm so visual. I know not everybody's like that. And I found a really good resource about this a while ago that. It's a scholarly scientific article from a scientific journal that describes the. It was either a CAT scan or MRI that they put people under a psychedelic state, under a shamanic state, under a psychosis state, and just and really looked at the brain functions. And while they are all extremely similar in their phenomenology, the brain patterns are completely different. They're coming from different portions of the brain activating. So yeah, the experience is similar, but completely different portions of the brain are activating under each of those states. So I'm not going to sit here and say that psychedelics don't do something for you. I'm going to say it's a different experience. And that what I do takes a long time to train the brain to get to that state.
Okay. Interesting.
So we're about
And
half
that's not to discredit any person that wants to go and do ayahuasca and other plant helpers. That's fine. Those are great practices for those people. It's just never been my way.
Right.
If it works for you, it works for you. If it helps you, it helps you. That's fine.
Yeah, I have a cousin who started doing that actually, ayahuasca. And she started trying to get in touch with that, you know, those otherworldly kinds of spiritual elements. And she told me about her experiences doing it. You know, she so I'm just wondering if it benefited, you know, if it was beneficial to, but you said you don't do it, so I was wondering, you
I
know,
never
what.
have, so I can't speak to whether it's beneficial to everybody, but from people I know that have done it, have loved it, and had great experiences, great. If it helps you, it helps you. Wonderful. I can't speak to anybody's work other than my own.
Let's take a moment just to remind listeners, Radio Free Brooklyn is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. So if you'd like to support our mission, we can continue to bring you quality community radio. We invite you to make a one-time donation or monthly pledge at radioforbrooklyn.org/donate. You can donate as little or as a dollar, and even every cent helps us continue to stay on air. So please help support independent community media by pledging whatever you can afford. And remember that RFB is a 501c3 nonprofit, so your contribution is tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Again, that's radioforbrooklyn.org/donate. We're about halfway through, I think, or a little more than halfway through. I wanted to bring up a little bit of the ceremony so that then people get a little bit of an idea, because I think this conversation is going towards, like, what does it functionally look like? To engage with you and engage in general with these practices. I can say I did a little bit of a weekend course where it's like it involves drumming, and but I'll let you take over from here. But we can start with the drumming and the hurts of it and all that.
So to start with the drumming, my drums are my family. They are not instruments, they're not tools, they are people to me. They are representations of spirits I speak with that help me, and using that drum is working with that spirit. So I have deep relationships with my drums. They're people. When I am in a ceremony, what I'd like to do, and what typically how this goes, is I live on this farm, and I have built out in the woods, very remote, a little 8x8 deck, and I will lay down a really thick padded yoga mat in the middle of it and have the client just lay down and meditate, and I'll teach them some breathing techniques, and they just stay with that in and out, long, slow exhale, inhale, and all they have to do is sit and breathe. And then I will drum, and I will get myself into an altered state where I am seeing the energy flow. And when I see that, when I say I see the energy flow, I am oftentimes, not every time, but I get a visual of the person's, for lack of better words, I see their souls. I see the person laying there. I see their energy web, their energy flow, their soul laying out in front of me. And sometimes it's visual, sometimes it's just I feel this needs to happen, where I feel a crystallization in their energy flow. It's just it flows like water. And sometimes it freezes in a certain spot, sometimes it gets dammed up, it blocks. My job is to unblock it, to liquefy it, to get it, everything flowing properly, lining the chakras, all that kind of a thing, if that's the language you want to use. And I will use sticks and stones, antlers, feathers, anything from nature that I find that really calls to me. Oftentimes, I will take the client before we start this to the woods and we'll just walk. And I say, if you find anything like a leaf, a flower, or a stick that calls to you, this looks important for some reason, pick it up and we'll take it into ceremony. And it's just whatever speaks to them. And that's another thing that takes training, is to be able to use your intuition to say, oh, I don't know why, but that's important. That little dig lane right there is really important. Because it's, for whatever reason, their energy needs that. And so I'll have the client lay down and I'll get into altered state. And I'll start placing stones and sticks in certain places and feathers and antlers. And there really needs to be a picture of this. Like if you go to my website or Instagram page or that, you can see like a lot of the layouts I do with people. And it just helps their energies align properly. And like I say, I struggle with the word healing because I'm not doing any like medicinal work or anything like that. I'm helping you for you to align your own energy flow. I'm just an assistant. I'm conduiting universal energy through me to you for you your energy flow to correct itself. It's a lot like Reiki. I don't know a lot about Reiki, but everything I've been told, it's very similar. And it's just aligning everything properly. But I use crystals, stones, twigs, feathers, that kind of thing. And a lot of the times, the main spirit I speak to when I'm doing healing is Mother Doe. So I have a lot of, like, as you can see behind me, a lot of antlers I use in practice. These are ones I just find on the forest floor on the farm. I have dozens of them that just, for whatever reason, I find them. Okay, you're gonna be using a ceremony.
Yeah, I do
But
appreciate the autonomy. If you focus a little bit on the
yeah.
autonomy as well, bring that in a little bit.
Absolutely. So a newer practice I've started doing in the last 6 months is that I no longer tell the client anything of what I am experiencing. Excuse me. I will get them to record themselves on a voice recorder of everything they experience. That sorry, I've got to cough 1 second. Yeah, what they're seeing, what they're smelling, what they're hearing, what they're feeling in their body. They all record that because when you're in these sessions, you'll forget so much within 5 minutes. But when the session's over, we'll play back the recording. And then that's where the therapy comes in, the more traditional counseling aspect comes in. Like, okay, what did you witness? What does that mean to you? What does that represent to you? Not to me. Because I can dish out like, oh, I saw this and that and all of these things for you. And that's, I mean, that's a big traditional part of this practice. But I really like to focus on what it means to the client. Not put my own interpretation on anything. Sometimes I'll give a little bit of guidance just when it's just a little peppering, you know? But that's as far as I go. It's all about client autonomy.
Yeah, definitely. I wish Western medicine were a little bit more in that. You know, I feel like they're moving away from client autonomy or patient autonomy than a lot of times these kinds of energy practices do, only because they feel like they've, you know, in some ways that's a pathology in the traditional medicine world that perhaps, you know, is for another day. But the point is, you know, even as patients in a Western modality or in the traditional traditional medicine. Choose a medicine kind of way, we should have client patients be more empowered in this way, so they're able to
Yeah.
really understand their body is their body. I mean, you know, their mind is their
Absolutely.
mind, you know? Yeah.
That is 100% what I want to reflect is that this is all empowering the client. Like I said, I don't want to dish out wisdom from on high, from on a pulpit. I want to get down. If I'm doing a ceremony where I'm speaking to people, I will sit at level or lower than the people I'm speaking to. I don't want to be in a position of power at all. I want them to recognize that they can do this. I can teach them how to do everything I do themselves. It just takes time and practice.
I just want to quickly do another shout out. Let me see.
Yeah.
On February 28th, get ready to tune in to the Ultimate Music and Trivia Experience. Join us at Star Bar on Wednesday, February 28th at 8 p.m. for a night of musical delight. It's music-centered trivia night brought to you in collaboration with Radio Free Brooklyn on the Shuffle. Whether you're a music aficionado or just looking for a fun night out, this event is for you. To secure your spot, head over to Instagram and find us at the underscore shuffle for the sign up link. Tickets are $5. So mark your calendar, set your alarms, and make a date for February 28th at 8 p.m. Star Bar is where the music might happen. We can't wait to see you there. So yeah, some of these Radio Free Brooklyn community in Brooklyn, we're creating community. And also I want to ask you, so now you're living right now in Texas. You're gonna be moving to Vancouver, was it? And then tell us a little bit about a little bit of your how are you going to be handling clients online? Are you going to be handling clients through video?
For now, it's going to be mostly virtual. If there is a, I've had some local clients here in small town Texas come to me.
Yeah.
Quite a few, actually. But yeah, from the foreseeable future, it'll be mostly virtual. We will be moving to Port Angeles, Washington in August, which is a much more open community toward this sort of thing. So hopefully, I will be seeing a lot more people and helping as many people as I can up there. But for now, I can work with anybody online as long as the intention, excuse me, between both of us is present in the room,
Right.
the
Yeah.
energy's there.
I can say I did work with Braden as a practice client, just to try out all these modalities and really great stuff. And I used the audio for a storytelling show So in other words, like the audio of me going through the journey was used in a storytelling show, respectfully in that context of my life story or in the right context of my journeying in life. And there'll be another storytelling show I'll be doing on what is it? February, no, March 31st in the Vino Theater at 8 p.m. You can go to monsoonwarrior.eventbrite.com to find out more information about that. It's basically going to be a lot of the stuff you're talking about, the energy work I've done myself and the journey in that on manifestation work and how to answer the question of what's going to happen in the future, how to kind of come to that knowledge of like future events and not in a kind of woohoo way, but in a really grounded, knowing where I'm going, an intention setting way, like where am I going with my life and where am I, where in this world in consciousness am I heading? So, and that's a very private, sometimes a very private process, at least in the moment. But after the fact, I feel like we can tell, I feel like at least in my process, I can tell what happened when I set the intention and made the intention. So, it's really
So
great.
it's a one man show, right?
Your one man show, solo show. Yeah. So it's really great. Yeah. And I did one
Awesome.
before The Island Is Calling or Son of Superman. So it's great to promote it on this, on the show. But anyway, so now we can talk a little bit about stories and since I brought up storytelling, like stories of our lives and how we kind of package up these wisdoms in ways that relatable and Brain told a lot of stories now. And any more comments on how you empower others to tell their story?
Yeah. Huh. So I've always had this little like mantra of mine that like in life, do what makes for the better story.
Yeah.
Not always the wisest thing to do, but it can be fun.
Sure, yeah.
And then that's honestly, it's gotten me a long way because when you get rid of that doubting mind, that's the big thing. Get rid of the doubting mind. Think, oh, let release some of that logic, release some of that doubt and say,
Yeah.
hey, I'm gonna try this. Give it like a legitimate, well, maybe we'll see kind of an idea and run with it. That can take you so far in life.
I agree, I agree. And I think that rational mind, that rational
Yeah.
kind of schedule f fulfilling mind is really part of that, hegemony that we're trying to decolonize, trying to get rid of,
Right.
obeying the clock in the sense of being a slave to the clock or being a slave to schedules and being a slave to professionalism in the sense that it is rid the rigidness of it, the straitjacketness of it is really part of the colonial mindset, that the whole idea that England would go out and like be like, we're gonna make these countries more efficient, like kind of a thing was really their mindset. We're gonna save them from their inefficiency,
Yes.
is really the mindset
Right.
of this
Yeah.
of the colonial mindset, Yeah. So really great, really great.
That is such a hard thing for me to work with as an individual.
Yeah.
Just the
Yeah.
whole rigidity of perfectionism. Oh.
Yeah, and like competition among your fellow men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not me. No, that's not me. This was my first intro into Buddhism. When I was a kid, I loved, even like as a very young kid, 7 Years in Tibet, the movie with Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Loved the movie ever since I was very young. And there's a line in there, and it's something, and I'm going to misquote it and do it, just butcher it, but talking about how Western cultures value the man who can achieve more than his fellow man. But in the Tibetan culture, they valued the man who brings fellow man to his level, that gets everybody up. Keeps building each other up. And I don't remember the exact quote, but that was the mindset of it. I'm like, I love that. That we all try to just get each other, help each other out. And not try to one up and not try to be better than each other. Just try to get everybody. Equal's not really the word, but
Yeah, it'd be their best selves, I
help one
guess.
another.
It'd be
Yeah,
their
be their
best
best
selves.
selves.
Yeah, I like that. And when you observe animals, like for the most part, in their natural habitats, they're like, not like, they're more like in tune with the environment, and they're like,
Yeah.
really like they're not, slaves to the schedule in the sense that we are. Like, saves to
Right.
like competition in the sense that we are, but at the same time, when they're attuned to their environment, that's their most harmonious,
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people are so focused on just surviving that they don't have room for a lot of other things, like these other higher passions that they want to pursue, you know?
Yeah.
That is where I've been very privileged in my life. Just growing up on the farm and like in the winter time, I don't have a whole lot to do,
Yeah.
like professionally. And so I've had time to pursue my intellectual interests, my spiritual interests, all of these things. And it's really, as much as I don't like being a farmer, I have to completely admit it has gotten me where I am. Having that extra time, being able to listen to audiobooks 60 a year driving a tractor in circles is the
Yeah.
most monotonous thing on earth, but I listen to audiobooks and that has saved my life.
But and also I would say like Buddhism defines term laziness not as the way that we traditionally define the term, but in terms of like if you're not doing your spiritual work, you're actually lazy. Like if you're not engaging in the spiritual path, then you're lazy. Not that you're not doing, when we talk about work and effort, it's the joy that comes out of that effort, joyful effort. So when you're taking pleasure out of the spiritual path and engaging in the spiritual work, then you're being productive. Like, then you're being productive as opposed to working for the man, on a clock, clocking in and making sure you're doing all your assigned duties in a corporate capitalist mentality, that's not the point, So, yeah.
I think it was Jack Kornfield that said something that really spoke to me as a when you have young children, you don't have time to devote an hour, 30 minutes a day to sit and meditate. But your Dharma practice is raising your kids the best way possible. That is your spiritual work, and that's what I'm doing right now. I'm
Yeah.
not in school. It's winter time here on the farm. I'm trying to devote everything I can to be the best father that I can, and that right now is my spiritual practice.
Yeah.
And
Right.
honestly, it's been really amping me up.
Yeah.
Just feels really good to be in that place right now.
Yeah, people talk about meditation as being sitting in one place and closing your eyes, but I think meditation is a way of life. And that if you're able to lift, when you go to the gym, you lift weights, not to lift weights, but to be able to have the strength to lift your grocery bag. So in that sense, like if you sit a little bit, good, but if you have contemplative life, better.
Contemplative life. That's it.
So one last thing, come celebrate independent music. Community is in the 5th annual New Colossus Festival, a 5-day showcase feature festival taking place March 6th to the 10th at independent music venues in Lower East Side. This year's festival will feature over 130 emerging artists from all around the world, as well as Ditto X, NYC 24 music conference and networking event. Be sure to swing by Arlene's Grocery on Wednesday, March 6th for the New Colossus Festival welcome party presented by yours truly, Radio Free Brooklyn. So go to newcolossusfestival.com to find out more information about that. And I think we're almost done, but we'll get some closing thoughts, closing ideas or thoughts, and then we'll start to wrap up. And I may play a song at the end in case we're a little short of the 59 minutes, but I want to get some closing thoughts in there, okay? So, Doug, you want to go first? Just say a little bit of your, just you can say a few words, and then we'll go to.
No, I just wanted to I just have like one more kind of question about like as it relates to shamanism, and that is what like from what I can kind of gain from what you've been saying, like it's not about an organized sort of traditional religion. It's more like a higher state of belief system, I guess, right?
Shamanism means many things to many different people. There's countless cultures across the globe that all practice some form of it in their own way. Like we talked about, some people do use ayahuasca, and that's part of their shamanic practice. Some people use mushrooms, that's part of their practice. Some people just use drumming, that's part of their practice. There's not a good, to me, a good definition of what shamanism is. But yes, I would say that it's Anybody of any culture, any religion, any spirituality can practice this. What I would define it as, just the definition of Brain Buchanan, is entering altered states through rhythmic percussion to achieve spiritual states. And that can branch out into a thousand branches on any tree. But I would say that's the roots of modern day shamanism. And however you want to color it, however you want to focus on it, that's great. Personally, I don't call myself a shaman. I'm just a, what are we going to use the word? Animist, functional animist. I don't know. But it's just,
Yeah, I
but
understand.
that, but I practice this shamanism.
And I would say non-ordinary states of consciousness are the main thing, is that we have ordinary conventional knowledge, conventional understandings, and then we have kind of an altered or like a non-ordinary that is normal, like in the sense that we're normalizing the non-ordinary, so that then it's not always about, that same shit, different day kind of a thing. It's actually the wonderment of our lives is being unraveled here, as opposed to, oh, I'm just clocking in every day and that's all my whole life has been. Finally, we can unravel the wonder underneath it all. And whether you stay in your job or whether you leave your job, doesn't matter. It's about the adventure you're having every day clocking in then. I mean, it's okay to be at your job, but for God's sakes, let it not be a drain to your energy, like let it not be like a dying every day at the sound of that clock in, We should be alive,
Yeah, the wonderment of every day is so integral to this. I just walk through the woods and I'll see one little blade of grass wiggling on its own. I'm like, oh, you want to talk to me? That's just a blade of grass, but I'm no more special than a blade of grass. I'm just walking, talking mud. That's all I am.
Thank
With. Yeah, and that's all we are. I mean, it's just, I am no different than any blade of grass. I'm no different than the cow in the field, the deer in the woods, the we're all just wonder, wonderment.
And that note, I think it's a beautiful note to end the episode on.
I agree. Yeah, totally.
We'll continue to listen. I know it's airing on Sunday at 7 a.m., but we're going to be on YouTube. We're going to be all over the place. So hopefully people will continue to watch the episodes and the back episodes at reliefbooking.org/truth-to-power. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you very much.
It's time for me now to gather my possessions. I leave you my love. Right to the north once more. No more will I sleep, no easy tomorrow, my betrayal deep. And deep is my sorrow.